Good morning, everybody. My topic is going to be the world of spirits. And very simply, the world of spirits is not heaven, nor is it hell, but it is the intermediate place or state between the two. For to that place man comes at first after death, and then after a certain time, he either is raised up into heaven or cast down into hell, in accordance with his life in this world. So my theory here with starting with the world of spirits is that if you want to understand what heaven and hell is like, learning about the world of spirits is a really good place to begin. Because the world of spirits is where, of course, you prepare to finally either go to heaven or hell. Now, to start with, I wanted to just talk a little bit about what the very general use of the world of spirits is. And in the world of spirits, we are told a certain conjunction takes place. And one of the things I think most people in this room probably already know is that every single one of us have a will and we have an understanding. The understanding part of our mind is the part that receives truths and is formed from them. Our understanding is what allows us to think about what is good and true in the first place. And then our will, the will part of us, is the part of us that receives goods, we're told, loves and affections from the Lord, as opposed to, you might say, ideas, which we receive in our understanding. And what we are told is that it is the conjunction of these two things in a person that determines whether or not they are in heaven or in hell. Or you might say in a heavenly state or a hellish state. I want to read this passage and pay attention to this because this is a really important one, not to just understanding the world of spirits, but to understanding everything about the life after death. We read, "To the extent, therefore, that the truths of the understanding and the goods of the will are conjoined, that is, to the extent that a man wills truths," again, doesn't just know them, but wills truths and does them from the will, "to that extent he has heaven in himself, since the conjunction of good and truth is heaven. And on the other hand, just to the extent that the falsities of the understanding and the evils of the will are conjoined, man has hell in himself, since the conjunction of falsity and evil is hell." All right? So this is why, for example, in so many places in Scripture, the kingdom of heaven is referred to as a wedding, a marriage of two things, sometimes the Lord and his church, but in this case, I want you to be thinking about the marriage of a person's will and their understanding. Happy are those who have been called to the marriage supper of the Lamb. And in several places, the kingdom of heaven in various parables is defined or likened, if you will, to a wedding feast. Again, the marriage of the will and the understanding. Now, interestingly, this same passage then goes on to point out that one of the big problems we face in this world is that as long as we are alive in this world, most people in this room do not have a conjoined will and understanding. All right? And let me just read this passage or a portion of it. "So long as the truths of the understanding and the goods of the will are not conjoined, a person is in an intermediate state. And at the present time," notice this, "nearly every single person is in such a state that he has some knowledge of truths, and from his knowledge and understanding gives some thought to them and conforms to them either much or little or not at all or ex contrary to them. In order, therefore, that a person may have either heaven or hell, he is brought after death at first into the world of spirits, and there a conjoining takes place of good and truths with those who are to be raised up into heaven and of evils and falsities with those who are to be cast down into hell." And then I kind of like this last line, "For neither in heaven nor in hell is anyone permitted to have a divided mind." Interesting phrase there. So do you have a divided mind? We'll talk about that a little more in a minute. Now, before we get into some of the interesting steps we go through in the world of spirits, one other point here. In addition to describing this conjunction that happens in the world of spirits as the conjunction between our will and our understanding, this is also described as a conjunction, or you might say a harmonizing, that happens with your internals and your externals. Think about it this way. If your will and your understanding are not conjoined, if they don't make a one, that means that you can use your understanding in order to put on a false face, if you will. You know, if you are a very, very evil person, for example, all you care about is yourself and loving yourself in the world, so your will is very evil, you can use your understanding then in order to put on a false face. You know, knowing what you do know about good and truth, though, you can pretend to be good. And that's what the writings say, that when people live in this world, they can also make it so that their internals and their externals do not match. And so we read that that which is in the understanding alone is with man and yet not in him. It is only a thing of his memory or a matter of knowledge in his memory about which he can think when in company with others and outside of himself, but not in himself. That is, about which he can speak and reason and can simulate affections and gestures that are in the world, or excuse me, in accordance with it. So to summarize, here's your hypocrisy meter. I'd ask everybody to raise your hand depending on where you are on this meter. Is your hypocrisy slight, amusing, bothersome, irritating, blatant, monumental, or gross and disgusting? Thank you, Pierce. Where were you raising your hand there? Monumental. Thank you. So a very interesting starting point for us, for at least this morning's discussion, that the length of time you spend in the world of spirits before you either go to heaven or hell all depends on how long it's going to take to get your internal and your external, or another way to put it, your will and your understanding conjoined and truly working in harmony with each other. This is that classic number that some of you might know of that talks about how people spend different times in the world of spirits. Some a day, some a week, some a year. But this says nobody tends to spend more time than 30 years in the world of spirits, which sounds pretty long to me. I don't know if I want to spend 30 years there. But there's that number for what you want to make of it. And again, these differences in time, they remain depending on the correspondence or lack of correspondence of man's interiors with his exteriors. All right? So let's move on to the three states we go through in the world of spirits. So that's the goal of waking up in the world of spirits. In order to achieve this goal, we're told that most people go through three states when they first wake up there. The first state is called the state of your externals. The second state is called the state of your internals. And the third state is called the state of instruction. And what I want to do here is just sort of walk us through these three states and what exactly happens to a person as they're going through these three states. I'm going to actually skip this next slide, but a little teaser. You can talk to me later about near-death experiences if you want and sort of where these fit in to this whole process. But my theory here is that the process we're going to be talking about today is not about what people experience in near-death experiences. That happens in actually an earlier state that we're not going to go into today. So there. I guess I didn't skip that slide. I told you about it. So let's start with the first state, though. The first state is called the state of your exteriors. And here is the best passage I could find to sum it up for us. We read that the first state of man after death is like his state in the world. For he is then likewise in externals, having, interestingly, a like face, like speech, and a like animus, thus a like moral and civil life. So it is that he then does not know but that he is still in the world, unless he gives attention to what he encounters and to the things told him by the angels when he was resuscitated. that now he is a spirit. Thus is one life continued into the other, and death is merely a transition. So again, the first state that you wake up to in the spiritual world is going to be the state of your exteriors. And there you are going to look, you are going to sound, and you are going to act exactly as you did while you were in this world. There's another interesting point that's made here. It's therefore that in this state, we tend to have the opportunity to meet our friends, meet our acquaintances that we had known in this world that had passed on before us. Again, not people that we might have some deep internal affinity with, but just people we had known, maybe even family members that were going to end up in different places in heaven. But in this state of externals, we have an opportunity to meet with them and talk with them and visit with them. Swedenborg himself, interestingly, said that it was in this first state that he was permitted to meet almost everybody he had known in this world. And he witnessed the fact that in this state, they acted exactly as they acted while they were in this world. They looked the same, they sounded the same, and again, pretty much acted the same. So again, this is the state of your externals. Now, one of the things that I find, let me catch up with myself here. One of the things that I find very, very interesting about this state is that after you've been in it for a while, you start to wonder about heaven and hell. You know, oh my goodness, I'm dead. Look at that. I want to know a little bit more about what heaven and hell is like. And so it says in the passage we're about to look at that in this state as well, the first state, your friends and maybe some people you're meeting for the first time, I don't know, began to take you on a little tour of the world of spirits and teach you things about heaven and hell that you might have not known about before. Interestingly, it says that these friends and angelic spirits tend to focus on fairly external things at this point. Why? Because that's what you're interested in when you're in the state of your external still. So my understanding of that is that your friends and angels might point out how beautiful heaven is and how there's really neat things there and fun things to do and stuff like that. And again, the beginning of this passage here talks about that. But I want to skip down to the middle, to the dot, 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 dot there, and notice something that I find rather humorous. It says, right here, nearly all are anxious to know whether they will come into heaven, and most of them believe that they will. Right? So most of us think we're going to heaven, right? We're good people. Notice in this first state why people think that. The passage continues. Because of their having lived in the world a moral and civil life, never considering that the bad and the good alike, or live alike, life in externals. Alike doing good to others, attending public worship, hearing sermons and praying, going to Jacob's Creek camp, I added that part, and wholly ignorant that external deeds and external acts of worship are of no avail, but only the internals from which the externals proceed. And here's the part that I find so interesting. There is hardly one out of 1,000 who knows what internals are and that it is in them that a person has heaven and the church. And such, for the most part, are those who at this day come from the Christian world into the other life. Jessica.
Are you open to questions for?
Yeah, brief ones, hopefully, because hopefully I'll leave some at the end. Yes, thank you. Good point. You know, I'm sometimes skeptical about saying that, well, that was just in Swedenborg's days, but sometimes I think that is an absolutely fair thing to state. So in this case, I think, yes, the hope is that as time goes on, we'll get up to 2 in 1,000, then 3 in 1,000, and then hopefully then most people will know this. Greg.
Just going back a little bit to the part where you meet all your friends and acquaintances.
Yes.
Are those spirits still all in the world of spirits, or do some of them come down from above and come up from below? Or?
That's a great question. That's one of those ones I want to kind of just slide over for now. you know, 30 years. I mean, my gut reaction is that there are times maybe when I wonder about this with spouses. I don't know. You know, that somebody might have continued on and that they can kind of come back down into that state of world of spirits because somebody has died that wants to see them or talk with them. And Vance actually will probably be helping address this afternoon. Excellent. Perfect. Answer definitively. We want a definite answer to that. So going back here. So yes, one of the things that this passage that I think is so interesting brings up is the fact that, and I think this is true even today, that so few of us really know who we are. You know, we talk about how we, you know, shouldn't judge others because we don't know other people's internal states. But I think it's so fascinating that the writings often point out that in the world today, people are very bad at knowing what they are like, you know, what their true internal states are, because we spend so much of our time focused on what we're doing out here. Now, again, that's not all bad, but we need to, as a human race, start spending more time reflecting on our internal states and therefore what our true state in the life after death is going to be. Now, why do we do this? Why do we not know ourselves very well? Well, the writings give us a lot of reasons for this. One reason, for example, is that we do tend to get distracted by problems in this world and things we need to deal with in this world. You know, we spend so much time at our job, for example. You know, we wake up in the morning, go to work, come home tired, go to bed, that we often just don't have the time to really do the self-reflection that the writings encourage us to do. But on a little bit more of a depressing note, not that that's not rather depressing, that's good enough maybe, but here's a passage from Heaven and Hell that I find quite depressing, actually. It says, a person is accustomed from childhood. You know, think of all the little children that were even here today during the worship service. From childhood, to maintain a semblance of friendship, benevolence, and sincerity, and to conceal the thoughts of their own will, thereby living from habit a more uncivil life in externals, whatever he may be in internals. Now, again, I think there's actually a use to that that we can talk about later. But again, it says, as a result of this habit, a person scarcely knows what his interiors are and gives little thought to them. Pierce?
Do you know if that word from childhood is from childhood or from infancy? Like, are we talking 10-year-olds?
I do not. That's a good question.
Because the picture looks like an infant to me.
Yeah, that could very well be. Honestly, I didn't really...
So, I still have hope for 3-year-olds being pretty non-critical.
No, they're pretty much done for. No, that could very well be... my local scholar, Steve Collier, could maybe...
I'm not saying she's good.
No. That's a good point. I mean, to that point, though, I would say, and I assume this is all of our experiences, those of us who have kids, it is amazing to me how early on they start off putting on this false exterior. I mean, even things like with lying, you know, and that's why I think, you know, even a 3-year-old can definitely, no, I didn't.
Joe? We do teach our 3-year-olds to make a show. I mean, we teach them,
yes,
share your toys,
yep,
don't hit the baby, don't,
yep,
bite.
Absolutely. And that's why I say that in some ways this isn't all bad. You know, the fact that we do have this thing called a corrupt will, and I don't want to focus on this today, but it's a good thing that I can pretend right now to like you all. And I'm so glad I'm here and talking to you all, and really I'd rather be on vacation right now. No, just kidding. But, you know, there's an important part of being able to say, no, my will is bad, and yes, I would act like this if I really had it my way, but I know that's wrong, and so I'm going to... But again, there's obviously a negative side to that as well, where we put on this false face just to get our way, right? And to, you know, achieve our own selfish ends, because when you think I'm a nice person and you think I'm a good person, I can get more out of you, or I can get more honor from you and reputation. What does Dole say?
We are trained from infancy.
Uh-huh. Infancy. So that's... So that makes me think earlier than childhood, right? So that sounds like from the get-go.
Yeah.
You know, a two-month-old baby is already probably trying to get nerd, right? Well, actually, it's true. Sorry, I want to move on here, but I'm just suddenly thinking of a little baby crying when they want a nurse. Or so. I don't know if that's sort of even the start of, I'm going to put up a hissy fit on the external because I want something. I don't know. But interesting. So it's very early on, at any rate. So, a rather sad point that we're going to come back to here in a little bit when we get to the second state. I'm going to skip over these numbers for the sake of time, but because we are so bad at knowing ourselves, and again, knowing what we truly are like in our internal state, in this section, in Heaven and Hell on the First State, quite a bit of time is actually spent explaining that it is the love that makes the life of a person. You know, not just what you do or just what you think. I mean, ramifications here on faith alone, of course, come into the picture. It is the love that makes the life of a person. And so the second number here, 1,000 people may act alike, that is, may do like deeds, so alike in external form as to be almost undistinguishable. And yet each one regarded in itself is different because from an unlike will. And again, I'm repeating myself here now, but it's so important. Do you know what your will is? Do you know what your ruling love is? And the writings say not many of us are really good at reflecting on that and considering it.
What if you decided you were pretty good? That's not
a very good way. Hold on to that question, because we're going to get to that. In a sense, because, you know, you're right in a sense. There's a balance there. If you think you're, I mean, interesting, the point here began with most people think they're going to heaven, but they're not, right? So, but at the same time, we're going to see here as we go on that part of the point of this, I believe, is that the Lord wants us to become more aware of where we're likely to be going after death. And again, you want to be humble about that, but you know, I think the point is to reflect on your internal state a bit more. So let's move on here. There'll be more opportunity to ask questions as we go, but I want to keep moving here. So, to summarize the first state, the entire state of the world of spirits usually lasts no more than 30 years. Interestingly, this state, it says, doesn't generally last more than 1 year. So for up to about a year, you get to be like you were in this world. Again, for shorter or longer time, with each one differently in accordance with the agreement or disagreement of his interiors with his exteriors. So let's move on to the second state now called the state of the interiors. And this is where I think it gets even more interesting. In summary, the second state of man after death is called the state of his interiors, because he is then let into the interiors of his mind, notice this, that is of his will and thought, while his exteriors, which he had been in during his first state, are laid to sleep. So the second state is the state you come into where your true character, your true ruling love really comes out for the world to see. I'm going to get to that horrifying thought here in a minute as well. The first point, though, I want to make about this second state that I think is very important is that this doesn't happen overnight, all right? You're not going to find yourself in the first state of the world of spirits, acting like you always have, and then wake up one day and, oh my goodness, I'm now a complete jerk because that's what I'm like interiorly, or I'm a complete saint because that's what I was like interiorly. I'm not quite sure of the ramifications of this, but I thought this passage was interesting that points out right in the middle there that into this state, a person unconsciously slides. Glides. Same thing. Just as when in the world, he withdraws the thought nearest to his speech, that is, from which he speaks, towards his interiors. Thought and abides in the latter. Therefore, in this state of his interiors, the man's spirit is in himself and in his very life. So think about a time, you know, when you're not sitting here in a group of, you know, 40 other people. Maybe you're in your home alone and your mind just starts to drift. Those are the states where our true character, if we're paying attention, really come out. You know, what are the things when you are alone that you tend to think about? and focus on and be concerned about. And I only bring that up because just like we kind of glide, is that the word? Sorry. Glide into that state when we're alone in this world, we also sort of slide or glide into that state in the world of spirits as well. It doesn't happen overnight. Now, I hope some of you look like this right now, because it's a sign if you do. This gliding into this state of your interiors happens in a variety of different ways. This is just one that I thought was rather humorous. And I know people like this in my congregation, by the way. No, just kidding. So this continues off this idea that in the first state, people are led around and shown different things, and angels teach them about the life after death. I find this very funny for some reason. Evil spirits are distinguished from good spirits chiefly by this, that the evil give eager attention to what is said about external things, and but little attention to what is said about internal things, which are the truths and goods of the church and of heaven. These they listen to, but not with attention and joy. So if you're in the world of spirits and you see some people around you starting to yawn as the angels teach you about the life after death and what heaven is like and interior goods and truths, or if you start to yawn, you might be in trouble. You might be a sign that your interiors aren't quite where they should be. And then I thought this was interesting as well. They are also distinguished by their turning repeatedly in specific directions. So one of the things we know that is about the spiritual world is that, you know, directions have correspondences, right? There are certain directions that correspond to evil loves and certain directions that respond to good loves. So in this second state, you know, here we are wandering around taking a tour of Jacob's Creek, and some of us are going to start wandering off and noticing something over there that we want to pay attention to. And it says that the angels and the good spirits can tell the nature of a person as their interiors begin to come out based on also the very directions that they are turning. So in summary here, there's lots more we could say about this, but when the spirit is in the state of his interiors, it becomes clearly evident what the man was in himself when he was in the world. For at such times he acts from his proprium. So that's the point here. The second state is getting you to a point where you are now acting from your proprium, or you might say from who you really are. You're no longer putting on that false face or that false facade. Important point now that I want to get into a little bit. The good and the evil, though, this is really important, experience this process in very different ways. And I want to be a little careful here because I don't know if I hope I don't step too much on Brett's shoes and maybe some other presenters, because he's going to be talking about vastations. And I kind of wonder if this is the time when some vastations are happening, but I'll try not to go down that road too much. So how do the good and the evil experience this second state differently? Well, for the good, this is actually a wonderful experience, because for the good, they experience this as waking from sleep, as one passage says. And for the good, after they enter the state of their interiors, they become more wise and more loving than they were in this world. And I'll just give you a second as I catch up on my notes here to go ahead and read these passages just to yourself about what it is like for a good person to go through this second state where their interiors are truly revealed. So read that on your own, and again, I've got to catch up with myself here. All right. So aren't there some great passages? I love those passages, because it points out that, you know, even good people need to go through this second state, because while we're in this world, we're going to be facing natural problems that sometimes prevent us from fully entering into our good heavenly loves. So in the second state for a good person, this is a wonderful opportunity to, again, be able to express your love in a full and complete way, something that you weren't necessarily able to do while you were in this world. So that's with the good. Now with the evil, however, it says that the evil actually become more insane. in this state. Why? Well, because in this world, they were only able to put on a face of sanity in order to try to trick people and to cover over their hellish loves. So for the evil in this second state, it says they become more insane. We read, he who was an evil in the world then acts foolishly and insanely, and even more insanely than in the world, because he is free and under no restraint. For while he lives in the world, he was sane in externals, since by means of externals he made himself appear to be a rational man. But when he has been stripped of his externals, his insanities are revealed. Now, does that make sense to people? Are there any questions about that process an evil person goes through? Again, you're not allowed to kind of pretend to be good anymore. So how insane you actually are gets revealed in this state. Lisa?
Just a quick question. So you're going to have good and evil people together. Is there a protection that these people that are coming into this insane state are not going to be able to hurt other people?
Yes, but give me a second here, because we're going to actually see that this process the evil go through actually serves an important use for the good people going through that same state as well. So that's a very interesting question. So the answer is yes. I mean, the whole point of this is to eventually separate the good from the evil, so the evil can no longer infest the evil, the good, it says. But as they're going through this process, as those evil spirits begin to show their true character, I mean, imagine it. The good around them are noticing this. You know, oh, my goodness, look at that. They're actually quite evil. And this actually serves a use for them as well that we'll get to in a minute.
Because are they allowed to act? Because it says they act foolishly and insanely.
Well, absolutely. Notice this second passage. From their evil lust, they then burst forth into all sorts of abominations. You know, so part of the point here we're going to see is that the evil spirits or evil people are allowed to go through this process to really make it clear to themselves as well what they are really like and what they would do if they didn't have any restraints put on them and their true internal character were allowed to, you know, just burst out. So let's actually get to that then. So a few points I wanted to make about this second state. This second state, especially focusing on the evil going through this state, is actually very useful for both the evil and for the good. For the evil, as they go through this second state, they are able to see what their true character is. All right? Because remember, you might be an evil person, but not really quite recognize what your ruling love is. So it's almost a sign of mercy that the Lord allows evil people that are going to choose hell, they're not sent there, they're choosing it, to really see what they are really like and to acknowledge it. Not in a, you know, in a way that they embrace it before they head off to hell. But what's interesting is that this state also serves an important use for the good. And let me just read these two passages. It says, they, meaning the evil, are also brought into many states of their evils, that what they are may be evident to angels and good spirits. Now, let me ask you a question. You're in the world of spirits. You're in the second state of the world of spirits. People's interiors are beginning to come out. Assuming you are a good person on your way to heaven, why might it be important for you to see the true nature of some of the evil people coming out as well? What use might that serve for you? Any ideas? Yeah, that's a great answer. Notice the second passage here. The insanity of such, meaning the evil spirits, is restrained, so that answers your question a little bit, by the Lord, that it may not rush beyond the limits of its use. And this is, I think, exactly your point. For even by every one of such pure spirits a use is performed. In them, good spirits see what evil is and its quality, and what man is when he is not led by the Lord. And I think to your point, the idea there is that then they can begin reflecting on themselves and realize that, oh my goodness, I want to be careful because I do have a little bit of that same tendency to, you know, backing up here for a minute, burst forth into all of these abominations. You know, I want to remain humble here and recognize that I want to be careful not to, you know, make the same mistake, if you will, that you know, these other people are obviously making. Jamie.
But that's all part of the process of you finding out what your ruling love is, because at that point you can't change.
Absolutely.
You're committed.
Absolutely.
You just don't know for sure
which
way you're going.
Absolutely. So that's a good point. The other thing I was... Pierce?
It also seems like the emphasis there is on the Lord. It's not just, oh, I'm inclined to evils too, but there before the grace of God. Anything.
Yes.
Turning them not just to a good person, but a worshiper of the Lord.
Yeah. Very good point. Yep.
They might possibly have been in the state of externals. They might have met a friend that they had known.
Yes.
And who they always thought was a good person. And then they find out that they have to leave this friend because he's not.
Absolutely. That was the other one I was thinking about. And it doesn't so much talk about that in this section of Heaven and Hell, the book. But there are other passages that I find actually very depressing that talk about the fact that when as we develop friendships in the world, even if those friendships are based on very external things, in the spiritual world, it is still sometimes difficult to let go of those external bonds. There are actually some very moving passages about fathers and sons, for example, where it says a father and a son meet in the world of spirits. And it becomes apparent, and just imagine this, it becomes apparent, I forget whether it's the father or the son, that one of them has chosen a hellish life. And it's in this state that they need to learn to let go of each other, if you will. And kind of let that son or that father, whichever it may be, make their choice and to sort of head off to the hell that they have chosen for themselves. So I do wonder if part of the process here is literally you are seeing what certain spirits are like, as Joe said here, that you actually knew that, oh my goodness, you know, they really did choose this lifestyle and therefore I need to separate from them and let go. A little bit of a depressing thought, but it actually says, unfortunately, that sometimes this even happens with husbands and wives. You know, they meet and then they realize their differences in this second state, and that is where if they're not bound to be eternal partners, they part ways. Again, one of the sad points about this this state. Are you all ready? Oh, see, there's meant to be sound effects. Oh, well.
Oh, well. Forget it.
There's a drum roll there. Here's the scariest passage you're going to see during all of camp. Are you ready for it? One of the points that this section in the world of spirits, and reflecting here again on the evil becoming who they truly are, one of the most wonderfully horrific passages that comes up is this one from Heaven and Hell 462. And I will just read it in all of its glory. It says, in a word, to each evil spirit, all his evils, villainies, robberies, artifices, and deceits are made clear and are brought forth from the very memory of them. And his guilt is fully established. Nor is there any possible room for denial. So don't try it. Because all the circumstances are exhibited together. From these examples, it can be established that man carries with him all of his memory, and that nothing can be so concealed in the world as not to be disclosed after death, which is done in the company of many. Anybody squirming out there right now? According to the Lord's word, there is nothing concealed that shall not be uncovered, and nothing secret that shall not be known. Therefore, what you have spoken in the dark shall be heard in the light, and what you have spoken in the ear shall be proclaimed on the housetops. Now, if that's not a horrifying number, I don't know what is. Now, what I want to say about this passage is I want to strike a little bit of a balance here. I actually think that we all should be afraid of this passage. I think part of the point here is that, you know, everybody does think they're going to heaven, and sometimes we don't spend enough time recognizing that our motives for things might not be as pure, for example, as we might think. So we need to spend time, you know, focusing on these things and thinking about them, and thank you, Pierce, repenting, you know, if we do want to end up entering the Lord's kingdom of heaven. And in the spiritual world, if you've got an issue with this, and if you really are the type of person that have all these evil affections inside of you and you've done all these horrible things and you're just in total denial of it, you really might go through this process where, hey, I'm sorry, but we've got to make it plain to you what your state truly is. And it sounds to me, it's pretty clear that some people need to even go to the through the point where it's made clear in front of other people who they are. Whether that somehow humbles them, I don't know. The flip side to this coin, though, is that if we are a good person and we are doing our best, I don't think the Lord wants us to be too scared of this state. Do you hear that lovely angelic music that was supposed to be a little louder? In talking about this horrific sounding state that some of the evil go through, the Lord also makes this, I think, beautifully balancing point. We read here that the evil are punished because the fear of punishment is the sole means of subduing evils in this state. But good spirits, although they had done evils in the world, are never punished because their evils do not return. All right? Now, you mean arrogant? Allison goes, yes. I don't know if that's a sign, though, that you're not humble enough for me. It goes on. Moreover, it is granted to know that the evils they did were of a different kind or nature, not being done purposefully, in opposition to the truth, or from any other badness of heart than that which they received by inheritance from their parents. You know, I did this last year, actually. My mom's not here this year, but thank you, Mom, Dad. And that they were born into this, and that I think that born is kind of just drawn into in this sense, and that they were born into this by a blind delight when they were in externals separate from internals. All right? So I actually find this a very, very comforting passage. You know, it's saying here that, look, the Lord knows we all have all these evil tendencies from our heredity. You know, that's just a fact. And so we are going to make mistakes. We are going to do bad things that, in a sense, we got caught up in the spur of the moment, maybe. And we just ended up doing something that maybe was really quite horrendous and quite evil, but we did it when we were in a state of externals separate from our internals. Or we did it solely because we were swept away by some hereditary blind delight that we have towards evils. If that is the case, that evil, those evils are not going to be brought up for the world to see and, you know, proclaimed from the housetops. Greg?
I still think that raises the bar pretty high.
Yeah, thank you. Please, go on.
Look at all those things that are like little exceptions. And yet, you know, if you really have done some bad things that are not just because your mom was, you know, took away your ice cream or something...
Yes, so thank you.
I find this fairly, you know, additionally depressing.
Okay. Steve? I do want to know, we've got 4 minutes, so one or two more questions, and I got to finish up.
Appropriate, really. I think it's what you still own, what you still buy into. And that,
yes.
If they have, and this is sort of encouragement, get to work now.
Yeah.
If they've rejected these things and disassociated, things they've done in the past, they're not going to be punished for them because they've already recognized.
Dealt with them. They've repented of them already.
They repented. If you've already repented, you're not going to be punished in the other life.
Yes.
I think that's it. I think that's what it's getting at there, is if you've separated yourself from it,
that's
you're
it.
Still buying into it, you're in the other
case. Yep, I think that's exactly it. Yep.
And it's important to distinguish for me anyway, that this is acts and loves, not thoughts. Because sometimes our thoughts, we can think that we're consumed by our thoughts, oh my, I must be really...
horrible person, right?
But this is talking more about actions and things that we appropriate.
And loves.
Our loves.
Yeah.
And it's also important to me that when we're going back to earlier, when we're talking about is it true today as yesterday, is the question, the place I come from is the Lord succeeding in his one goal of getting more of us to heaven or not?
Yeah.
And if that's true, then there are more today who do see the internals and are having some kind of awareness about it.
Yeah.
And if it's not true, I guess I'm in a lot of trouble.
Well, and actually to that point as well, you know what? I think you're right in that it's fair to say that if you imagine what life was back before the last judgment happened, before the last judgment provided, we're told, the human race with this new spiritual freedom, you know, I think it probably is fairly fair to say that in today's world, you know, maybe people do have quite a bit more of an ability to recognize their internals, and maybe people are doing it to a greater extent than I give them credit for. You know, because that's a good point. You know, Jessica again brought that up as well, that maybe, you know, again, I think we've got a long way to go, but yes, we've moved on and we are better at it. I'm going to have to jump here. I say this every year. My goal in life is to someday complete my presentation at Jacobs Creek. It's never going to happen. It's not going to happen this year for sure. So real quick, another point I wanted to make about the second state, especially with the evil, this actually touches, I think, a little bit, I forget whether it was Stephen was saying, someone else. As you think about the evil going through this state specifically and, you know, having their evils revealed, it also points out that in this state, the evils have everything that is good and true taken away from them before they go off to hell. And the point here I want to make is, you know, don't feel too sorry for these people. We should feel sorry for people. That's a good thing. But remember that the evil in this state are not having anything taken away from them that they truly care about or that is truly their own. The only thing they are taken away from them are the kind of truths and ideas that they held on to just to get their way. You know, they're not having something taken away from them that they really, really want and desire. So don't picture these evil spirits having these truths ripped away from them in this state. And they're, oh, no, give them back, give them back. While the sense of freedom is different, do remember that as the evil go through this second state, they too are brought into a state of more freedom because they can act from their evil loves more freely, which is what they love to do. You know, so remember that. Lots more I wanted to say about that. But again, excuse me, I'm going to have to just rush here. That talks a little bit about that. Maybe I will sort of end with this then, and we're going to leave the third state for another time. Know thyself. Examine thyself. You know, I started off by pointing out that it is interesting to me that the writing spends so much time reflecting on the fact that people tend not to know what their interiors are like. You know, who you truly are, and therefore where you're going to go after your life in this world. One of the things that I'd like to just maybe end with is the point that this isn't, however, the way the Lord wants it. And so one of the purposes of taking us through this state of these three steps of the world of spirits in the book Heaven and Hell, I think, really is to encourage us all to reflect more on what we are like in our interiors. And let me just read a couple passages about this. The bottom one here especially. After talking all about what a person is like in their interiors and how few people reflect on this, he does make this point. Everyone can judge from himself how he would act if, being such, he were left free to act with no fear of the law and no fear in regard to his life, and with no outward restraint, such as fear of injury to one's reputation or of loss of honor and gain and consequent pleasures. So again, the point here the Lord's trying to make is that, yeah, we may not be very good at this, but we need to start being better at it. And then another passage that I find even more powerful and to the point, after again explaining all these ideas that love is what makes the life of a person and that it's not just what you did externally that's going to get you into heaven, and this is all going to come out in the Word of Spirits, we read this. Anyone who has this knowledge can ascertain and know what his own state after death will be. There's a challenge for you. You can know what your state in the life after death will be. If he only knows what his love is. It sounds so easy, I know, but it is a little more difficult. And what its relation is to the universally ruling loves spoken of above, to which all loves have relation. All these things have been said to the extent that man may examine himself and may recognize his love by his delights, and thus so far as he can make it out from a knowledge of correspondences, may know the state of his life after death. And again, I wanted to maybe just end with that point because I do get a lot of people, I don't know, expressing to me the thought that we really can't know what our interiors are like. And, you know, it is almost arrogant to try to reflect on where we are going to end up after death. We do need to be careful with it. But I think the whole point is that the Lord wants us to do more deep reflecting on this and considering what our loves are and therefore where we might be headed. And, of course, try to change that trajectory if we see that we might need to. So I'm already a minute over time. If I had time, I wanted to talk a little bit about the third state, which is a state of instruction. With the good, they are instructed before they go to heaven then, but we are just going to have to save that for another day. We did start a little bit late, so maybe let me give you guys about 2 minutes here to ask any kind of closing questions. Yes, please go if you got to collect your kids and stuff like that. So go ahead. Yes, go ahead.
Computers and cell phones and talk about distractions and freedom.
Yes.
Everybody's set free now. In secret. They do it at the dinner table.
Yeah.
Secrets. All around the dinner table. Kids are doing it. If we're not aware of what's going on in their life,
yep,
they're in deep trouble. And us.
Yep, technical tech.
So these are great conventions, and you can talk to somebody in the other world, on the other side of the world. Maybe it's your husband who's over in a war. I see that happening in my own house.
Yep.
The husband's over there, and she's here hoping he'll get home. That's a good kind of connection.
Yep.
But I wonder how many of these other inventions are so great. I mean, I'm so old, I feel like I'm shut up.
Yeah.
They don't want to talk to me. They turn that thing on, they plug in their ears between here and the school.
Technology is one of those things that has its blessings and its curses.
It's a curse.
Certainly. Pierce?
What was that passage that you just had up on one slide back, a few slides, about examining your lights?
Here?
Thank you.
I've been in now 487. I apologize for that. I wish I could have gone into a bit of the third state, which is instruction, but we can chat about that just around camp if you want to ask me any questions about that. What I'm going to do now is I've got some handouts here, and at this point, for those of you new to Jacob's Creek, I'm actually going to repeat this session, so if you want to stay for a second time and hope I get to the third state, you're welcome. I do it for the teachers and stuff who have been taking care of our kids, thankfully, during this session. But you are all now welcome to grab some coffee and on your own kind of go. You can go sit on the porch if it's not rainy or in the little gazebo there. Form little groups, you know, decide yourselves how many. And you can just discuss some of these questions about the presentation today if you'd like. These are just suggestions to get you going. Please do not, as I say on here, feel like you have to slavishly stick to these questions. But this is just an opportunity now to get together in groups of maybe, you know, 7 to 15 even up to if you want, and have a little bit of a casual conversation about the world of spirits, what happens there, and again, these are some questions to get you going on that. All right? All right, thank you very much. Get into some of this actually, so maybe I'll mercifully leave this out. Wanted to talk a little bit about why you shouldn't feel too bad for the evil who go through this state of having everything good and true stripped away from them and end up going to hell. I actually think Brad might touch on this a little bit, you know, why the evil are actually happiest and where they want to be, but I'll skip that for now. I will skip this because we already talked about it a little bit, although I think it's a hugely important part of this instruction we receive in heaven and hell on the world of spirits. You know, I began with pointing out that the writings say that not a lot of people know what their interiors really are like. I would claim, though, that that's not ideal. One of the reasons the Lord reveals what he does to us about this process we go in the world through in the world of spirits is so that we can start doing a better job on reflecting on who we are and figuring out what our true eternal state is going to be. And again, this is a little controversial, I find, because some people tell me that, well, we can't know. And somebody even brought up, I think, in the morning session, that isn't it kind of arrogant to try to figure out where you're going to end up? However, without going through all the passages here, I'll skip a bunch. This, I think, is the most powerful. Anyone who has this knowledge can ascertain and know what his own state after death will be. You can know what your state in life after death will be if he only knows what his love is and what its relation is to the universally ruling love spoken of above. And I assume that's love to the Lord and love to the neighbor and love of self and love of the world. All these things have been said to the intent that man may examine himself and may recognize his love by his delights, and thus so far as he can make it out from a knowledge of correspondences may know the state of his life after death. All right, so I want to leave that for now and spend 4 minutes here on the third state, but please, please recognize that to me at least, one of the most important reasons the Lord has taught us about this process we go through in the world of spirits is because he wants to get us thinking about it now. And he wants us to do a better job of recognizing our interiors and thinking about where we are headed so that we can work on it. So as Pierce said, we can repent, you know, if we find we need to, which I'm sure we all do need to. And at that point, a separation occurs. Sorry, I'm skipping a bunch here. So the third state. After you've gone through the state of your externals, after you've gone through the state of your internals, where your true character has come out, interestingly, we're told that the evil don't have a third state. You're done. So if you want to go to through the world of spirits quickly, just be evil. You don't have to go through the third state. Then you're right off to hell. You don't need instruction because you are your love. You have burst out into those evil abominations, and you didn't then just choose to follow your path to your society in hell. Interestingly, though, with the good, there is an additional state called a state of instruction. Now, again, I'm going to skip a slide here that discusses why spirits need instruction before they head off to heaven. Although I think this is an important point, so maybe ask me about this later. You know, why do angels need to be instructed before they go to heaven? Can't they just go to heaven and be instructed there? You know, aren't we always learning more and more things in heaven? So why do you have to go through any instruction first before you go to heaven? Ask me if you'd like about that later. But given the time, I just want to end with what I think is a very interesting and important point about what you learn in this third state. Assuming you are heading off to heaven and you enter this third state, the point is not that you are just going to learn all of these random facts about what heaven is like and who the Lord is. You might learn a few of the basics if you don't know them already. But the point of this third state that we go through in the world of spirits is to prepare you for your specific use. All right? And this is so important. You know, we all know, or I hope we all know, that we are told that the kingdom of heaven is a kingdom of uses. So you can imagine yourself, you're almost there. You've gone through the state of your internals, your externals. You're about to head off to your society in heaven. Before you do that, though, we're told that you need to get a little bit of instruction in terms of how you can come into your specific use. And let me maybe just end by reading what I think is a beautiful passage. It says, spirits are constantly inspired with the affection of truth with regard to the uses of life. Therefore, with everyone, the affection of truth is so conjoined with the affection of use that they act as one. So imagine you're getting into that second state. What you now have an affection for is to get on to heaven where you can be useful. Because that's what you want to do now, because you're angelic. You want to love your neighbor and get on with being useful. So now you get some instruction on how you can go ahead and do that. And thereby truth is so implanted in use that the truths they learn to know are truths of use. I really like that phrase. They learn truths of use. In this way, our angelic spirits instructed and prepared for heaven. In consequence, the spirit becomes, as it were, his use. Therefore, when he comes into his society, into which he is initiated by instruction, he is in his life by being in his use. And why is the Lord telling us this? Well, here it is. From these things, it can be confirmed that cognitions, which are external truths, do not bring anybody into heaven. So the Lord doesn't want us to make this mistake that, oh, you got to learn things to get into heaven, like learning things gets you into heaven. But the life itself, which is a life of uses implanted by means of cognitions, is what finally allows you to enter into heaven and again into your specific use. So let me just grand man picture there. I'll skip that. So that is when, after you've been instructed in your use, that you can then enter into your heavenly home. You're welcomed there, and it feels like you've come into the house, it says, where you were born. And I'll just leave those up there for you to, beautiful passages for you to read on your own. Yes?
It just seems like that last number you read is such application just to education of our children in our schools.
Absolutely.
That
is New Church Education,
yeah,
in a nutshell.
That education for use by Bishop Townsend.
Yeah.
That's what it.
Absolutely.
Is singing to me.
I think there are some beautiful, I think in New Church Education too, the way we would expound on this is to say, and with our children, we want to instruct them not just for that life of use in this world, but, you know, part of the new churchness of it is, and for their eternal life in heaven.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a beautiful point maybe to end with. And that instruction goes on to eternity, but it is interesting that before you go to heaven, you need a little instruction to at least get you going in the right direction. I will maybe just sort of as a funny note to end on here. I thought this was interesting. Notice, those who have been instructed in the world have been prepared there by the Lord for heaven. So the more you learn in this world, maybe those of us in the new church who have the heavenly doctrine, we can pass through this third state a little more quickly. That's a little tongue-in-cheek, but I think there's a truth to it. So anyways, I think I will end there. Thank you all very much, and we're done now, so if you want to come up and maybe ask me any questions privately, I'm happy to answer them, but I think in about 5 minutes we are meant to be heading down for lunch, so...